Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name. I've got a name.
In the nearly 40 years since musician Jim Croce lost his life in a plane crash at just 30 years of age, fans have continued to celebrate his catalog, attracted to his stories of the characters he met during his travels and his rich singing and guitar work. Born into a tight-knit Italian family that didn't always support his love of music, Croce went from the cab of a truck to the top of the charts by the time of his death. But he was often worn out by the road, and with a young son at home, he sometimes regretted the demands of music stardom. Along the way, he fell in love with my guest this morning, Ingrid Croce, who grew closer to him with every line they sang together, starting in the bars of the Philadelphia suburbs. Croce was unable to enjoy most of his success. His albums have been popular posthumously, and his son AJ, just a toddler at his death, has carried on the family business in his own right. Ingrid Croce is the author of the new book, I Got a Name, The Jim Croce Story, which is published by DeCapo, and it's a pleasure to welcome her to the Roundtable. Thank you so much.
I'm really excited about being here, Ian. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I wondered why it took so long for you to write this story, because I imagine you've been thinking about it for quite a while.
Well, you know, it's a difficult story, and it's a painful story. I started to write it. Actually, what my position was, because I'm trying to go back, you know, all those years, I opened a restaurant as a tribute to Jim in 1985, and at that point, I decided that I wanted to write a cookbook called Time in a Bottle, T-H-Y-M-E, and do the story of our lives together in a cookbook with recipes, you know, that would punctuate what our lives were about. And so I had just met my fiancé. His name is Jimmy Rock, and he was an attorney, and he happened to have had a client. He said, I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine who is a book agent, and let's talk to him about it. And so we met, and he said, oh, I don't think I could do a cookbook. You remember back then, it was like probably Julia Child, The Galloping Gourmet, and, you know, very, very few cookbooks were out at the time. So he said, but I can do the biography. And so I started to do the biography, and as we got a publisher, and I would tell the story, they insisted on a ghostwriter, and I'd tell the story, and they'd say, they'd come back, and they'd write something that really didn't have anything to do with what I was telling them. I also had people from movie companies that were interested in doing a movie, and once again, I would tell them the story. It took a lot of time to do that. And again, they would come back with something that wasn't the story. So over that time, my now husband said to me, you know, I'd said to him, would you please help me write this? And I really felt that I needed some perspective on it. And I did. I really needed perspective on it. And so I had to convince him, and once I did, he left his law practice, and we started to, at the same time of keeping Croce's restaurant alive, we went on the road to meet with Jim's family and friends and fellow musicians. And we spent 4 years doing this, and on and off, and finally we handed the book to the publisher, and they wanted more sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and we said, you know, that's not what we're writing about. This is a real story, and it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you already know the end. So we've got to make sure we do this with respect for Jim and that we feel comfortable with this. So that's exactly why it took so long.
What did you mean by you needed more perspective on the story?
Well, you know, during the early part of our marriage, right after Jim and I were married, my father had passed away right after we married, and Jim had been sent out to complete his basic training for Army National Guard. And when he came back, we were together for a short time, and then, well, for about two years. And then I won a fellowship to go to Mexico. And Jim was putting me through school, and he was working as a special education teacher. He was driving truck. We were both making music because, you know, we were musicians at the time. We were a duo. And when I won the fellowship, he said, you know, well, why don't you go down and I'll join you there? So I took a friend of mine with me, and we went down to Mexico. And somehow, sadly, I was raped while I was in Mexico. And I was petrified to tell Jim about this. But as soon as he did come to Mexico, to San Miguel de Allende, where I was studying, I told him about the circumstance, and he became extremely angry. Our relationship really changed. And I didn't when I say I didn't understand the story, I wasn't recognizing how much that event had affected our marriage. We were so close. We were best friends. We did everything we did together. And the thing we did most together really was singing. And when this occurred, that was probably the only thing that really sustained the relationship, because it just fell into a very difficult thing. He felt somehow betrayed. It was a very different time. We didn't have, you know, rape crisis like we have now. We didn't have organizations that assisted or psychologists at that time where you would go and get help and be able to unravel or at least approach what it was that we had been feeling. And so in going back, you know, we wrote, as I said, this book earlier. And in going back about a year and a half ago, we pulled the book out because we wanted to get it done and recognized that the circumstance in Mexico had genuinely affected our marriage in a way that, you know, was then further bombarded by the music business and by the pressure and the road and the lack of sleep and, you know, all the things that go along with that kind of travel.
You know, the book opens right at Jim's last concert before the plane crash, and it's a picture of him, you know, kind of wanting to come back to you, a little fed up with the road, as you mentioned. Do you think that he would have stayed in the business had he lived?
There's no question. Music was his life, and, you know, not unlike what Arlo wrote in the front of the book. It's a beautiful piece that Arlo Guthrie put in there. And, you know, where he mentions that he never realized that, you know, his life would be defined in some way or could have been written by the woman that he loved. It was a very fun incident where, for us, it was fun because Arlo Guthrie and Jim and I used to perform at this little club called the Main Point in Philadelphia on the Main Line. And one night when we were opening for Arlo, he asked if we would play. He had a situation with his then girlfriend Jackie Hyde, who was having some issues. They were having a, you know, kind of a, not a quarrel, but she was kind of being secretive. And so he said, you know, he asked us if we would please play until he could get on stage. And we were playing literally over an hour and a half over our regular time, and we had no idea what was going on, but which he later explains that he found out that Jackie was pregnant, and, you know, of course he wanted to marry her. And but, you know, once he did marry Jackie and once they had their beautiful four children, they are still together. And Arlo is still on the road, and it's a struggle. It's never always perfect, you know. And, you know, being a road musician, you can, like Bob Dylan says, you can come back, but you can't come back all the way. Hmm. It's true. You can't come back all the way. When you go out on the road, you meet new people. You have new experiences. And the person who is not with you is having their own experiences. And it's very, very hard, even though Jim Croce and I spoke every single day, every day that he was away. It's still very hard to be able to fill in all those pieces. And I don't know how people can really do it unless you're together.
Knowing what you know about what that life is like, what do you think about your son's career? And did you ever try to give him any talks about what to watch out for, or this is what I went through with your father, anything like that?
Well, he knows what I went through with Jim, and he knows what it was like. He was there for it all. You know, he was there for it all afterwards because things started to fall down in terms of, you know, being in court for 12 years and, you know, groupies stopping into his own house, if you can believe that. You know, just all kinds of crazy stuff would happen. And over that period of time, you know, he got a very clear picture. And You know, AJ's a real faithful husband, a terrific dad, and I think he learned a lot about that. And when he went on the road, I don't think that he had the same problems that Jim had. I think he learned a lot from Jim's experiences. I never discouraged him. I only encouraged him. I knew that that's what he wanted to do, and I'm so thankful that he did, because he's a wonderful, a fabulous piano player, songwriter, singer-songwriter, and plays guitar, and he does a great job.
You write in the book quite movingly about what it was like to first play music together with Jim, and that was really the spark that brought you together, as you mentioned. You were sort of flirting through song, more or less. What do you remember of those times? What made you two work so well together, musically and otherwise?
Well, you know, it's weird. It was one of those things where, you know, you say for me, it was felt like it was meant to be, and I think for Jim, too. So many things happened between us, but when I met Jim, he was the judge for the contest that the Rum Runners were in, and I was the lead female singer for the Rum Runners. There were five or six college PMC, Pennsylvania Military College guys that were headed off to Vietnam, and I was the lead singer, and we were stuck in a car lot, and I saw Jim Croce. I didn't know it was Jim, but I saw this young man with curly hair drive up to me as we were stuck in the snowstorm, and he came to help us. And as I went into the control booth and set up to play my guitar and sing with the band, I looked through the glass, and I saw that he was sitting in there, and he was judging this contest that we were doing. And from the minute that our eyes met, it felt very exciting. I felt like I was home. It's a weird feeling when you find the one that you want to be with and the one who wants to be with you. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing, and I see that in very few people in life, you know, but when you really find that match, that best friend, that partner, you know it. Then on top of that, to have the benefit of being able to work together every day of our lives, you know, to be able to sing together, which was our work at the time. I mean, I was an artist, and that's what I really wanted to do. But after 3.5 years of college, we got an offer to go with Capitol Records. And, you know, I felt that after Jim had put me through school and worked so many jobs and cooked me so many meals, that it was really his turn to be able to do what he wanted to do. And so I left school in the middle of my senior year and joined, both the two of us joined the college concert tour and went on the road and traveled 100,000 miles a year for quite some time. So I really understood what the road was about when he went out to do it. And we understood that, you know, music was our tie, and we thought that that would keep us together. And I think ultimately it did. I really do.
But as long as those railroad tracks go on, unending, we'll be off to another day in another town. We'll be off to another day in another town.
More than a few people have talked about the act of writing memoir, and that you sort of have to be at peace with separating yourself from the memory. Once it's down on paper, that becomes the document. So I wonder if you feel at peace with the story up until now that the book is finished.
Thank you so much for asking me that question. That's a great question. I do. I feel so happy. You know, I wrote this with my second husband, Jimmy Rock. And he knew that I was hurting, even when we met 25 years ago. And he knew that the people that, you know, Jim's mom and his brother and his family, we all had a hole in our hearts from Jim. We all felt a loss that could not be changed. And it was wonderful to be able to tell these stories openly and to share with everyone who wanted to be a part of this book the good times. And the good feelings that how we loved him, how all of us loved him. And I've got to tell you that I am at peace now that this book is done. I feel an enormous relief. I hope that I've done Jim and the story justice. And his fans so far have really, really enjoyed it. So it's given me, you know, great hope that we did do a good job in telling the story in a way that only enhances the music And I certainly hope that that's what you took away from it when you read the book.
Oftentimes, you know, there's a tragedy, and then we sort of look to the rock and roll widow to become the keeper of the flame. How much did you feel that you had to take on that role? I mean, you've had a long time to live your own life since then. What's that process been like for you?
You know, I've always wanted to keep Jim's flame alive because, you know, he and I had an amazing relationship. His music is still continuing, and I hope I'm helping in many ways to keep that going. And I still love him, you know, and my husband accepts that, and my husband loves him too. You know, we both have, you know, AJ has had a stepdad for 25 years since he was 15 years old. I mean, my husband Jimmy Rock wanted to give AJ as much as he could in terms of understanding who his dad was and what he was about. And, you know, AJ certainly got to know his dad through the music like many other people did. But in writing this book, we hoped that AJ would also get to know more about, you know, who his dad was. And, you know, Rich Croce, Jim's brother, has been involved in this book, too, and he feels very, very close to this book. He's read it 3 times, he said, and every time he reads it, he feels closer to Jim. So I think that, and you're asking this, you know, as a widow, did I need to keep this alive? Did I feel responsibility? It was more than that. It was the only thing I could have done. I have no intention of letting my history and my love of Jim Croce and his music end. I feel that it will be with me, and I know that it will be with me for the rest of my life. And hopefully I can inspire others to listen to the music and have that be a song track for their lives, too.
Well, Ingrid Croce, I just want to thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you. The author of the new book, I Got a Name, The Jim Croce Story. The book is published by DeCapo. It has been such a pleasure to spend this time with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking with me, Ian, and it's been my pleasure to talk with you. You're an astute person, and I really enjoyed this interview.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.